It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
All right, better save up your lemons.
Save up my lemons?
The whole citrus crop is destroyed.
Oh, my gosh. It's been a bit cold here, but when you look at the center part of the state,
I lived in Wisconsin. I have been a polar bear, an official polar bear, but I have climatized to Southern California, and now I think Wisconsin has moved. And I was outside all weekend. It's cold.
I bet they didn't play soccer in Kansas in Kansas this weekend. I bet they
did. Yeah, they did here. I was here in Moore Park. There was frost all over the ground. It was terrible.
It was 23 degrees here with 30 mile an hour winds. So.
Sustained, not just gusting.
No.
It gusted to 60.
It was
terrible.
Frightful. So you were out in the soccer field in the cold all weekend.
Yeah, my favorite sport right now is basketball because it's indoor, and I'm loving that.
And I'm sure to people in Alaska and Wisconsin, we sound like
they
winds,
don't care. They're just like belly. You know, we're belly aching, but.
Boy,
it was cold.
Ice storm in the middle of the country has been really nasty. I got in on one of those the last part of the year. Now they're getting hit again. So you guys take care out there. Try to stay warm. You know where I was Sunday?
I have no idea. Where were you Sunday?
I was at a university teaching some of the bridge builders stuff for a doctoral candidate program for a educational management graduate degree.
Wow, that's a lot of titles there,
at university. Yeah, but you should have seen the one I was wearing on my chest. I walk in and they hand me my name tag and it says
yes?
Wayne Jacobson on it and then big letters underneath it, religious conservatives expert.
Oh! Expert, really?
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet you thought that up.
No, I didn't think of that. And I was sitting next to the sexual orientation expert, so that was a deal.
Well, hey, that's great. Did you find out what sexual orientation
expert
what's
does?
Going on? Yeah.
No, right. Because we were leading different bits of the class in different rooms. So we were just we all met together to kind of introduce everybody and the students to
Nothing
us.
Nothing like typecasting you, huh?
Oh, you know, I've never been. I've been doing
so
this
So how'd you
now.
Crawl out of that box?
I've been doing this for about 10 years with this university. About every 3 years, they have this phase of their doctoral program, and I've come over and helped them do a bit of it. And every time I go do it, I kind of see how much has changed in my thinking. This time, thoroughly devastated to put on the tag.
Thoroughly devastated you.
Because the religious conservatives was bigger than the experts. Like Wayne Jacobson, religious conservative.
Expert.
Yeah, but even if that wasn't there, just the whole. And then trying to be, you know, you get that look in people's eyes. Oh, you're one of those, you know. It was because we did a little class thing together, and then we got together for lunch. So all the people are there.
This
and the
was
professors
it, this was in California, huh?
Yeah. This
so
was
not too
there.
Many smiles about the religious conservative, huh?
You know, I don't think I would have won Mr. Congeniality. I'm
no,
sure.
Uh-uh.
I mean, maybe by the end of the day, because I had a lot of fun with it. But I tell you what, I was so glad to pull that thing off from around my neck. I just don't.
So how'd they introduce you?
You know, president of Bridge Builders and religious conservatives expert, because they had 10 different cultural groups that these students were being trained to think like. So I trained a group of 10 people, none of which have any religious background. Because
to think
they,
like religious conservatives.
I saw because they've got to role play some negotiations and role play what religious conservatives want. And it's part of a, you know, walk a mile in their shoes kind of thing and have greater compassion for a point of view different than your own. The program's fabulous. I just hated my name tag. I just went. This is frightful.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
That's funny.
Glad it's over.
So you train some people to think like religious conservatives.
I did, and I do a big bridge builder hit on how you find the common ground with atheists and Christians and other religious groups and different cultural groups, that there is a common ground of mutual respect, even though we disagree on a lot of issues like morality and other things.
Did they take their training well?
Oh gosh, they loved it. And they've got to write a 10-page paper after. So they're just, I'm trying to leave at 3 because that's when I get to get out of there. They're still putting the questions in. I mean, thank you. This was great. I have never even considered
fun.
That this is the way they're thinking. You know, they've always pretty much really looked down on religious conservatives. And I think by the end of it, they're going, okay, well, I understand why these people think now, why they do what they do, which is the point of it all. And so, you know, that helps. But, I, you know, 10 years ago, I used to feel like one. And now I'm not sure. I'm certainly not religious.
I don't think it'd ever tag you as one.
And I'm certainly not conservative about social issues in the same way that I used to be. So, I mean, part of it's that little kind of those measuring stick things where you say, well, the water's a little shallower or deeper here, whichever, but it's definitely moved. So,
why do you think you've changed?
Wow. Because God's been working me over. My goodness. I think everything about the way I think about so many things has changed, particularly cultural things and political things and what I would have fought for years ago politically and feel like that was worth doing for the kingdom. I'm seeing less that Jesus even took on that kind of thing. It's not that we can't, as Christians in a democratic republic, participate, let our voices be heard. I'm fine with all that. But I'm not, and as these people said to me, I said, what are the stereotypes? How do you view religious conservatives? That's how we start. And the answers are all narrow-minded, angry, want to be in control of everything. Just go
wow.
right down the list. And part of my job was to say, okay, how much of this is stereotype and how much of it is actual? And so we kind of worked through that. But when you hear how that whole thing is typecast and knowing that when I would have been much more identified as a religious conservative myself, when I would have felt like that tag would have been okay, I was an angrier guy. I was much angrier. Because I was miserable, I think, in that whole legalistic interpretation of religion. And when you're miserable, you just want to export that to other people. You just want to make other, I guess, that anger of if I've got to do this, if I've got to follow these stupid rules, then doggone it, you've got to follow them too. And that, so I just think it's a chance to look back and say, gosh, there's been some growing.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for where I'm at today. But it certainly was hilarious trying to wear that tag and let people know I'm not really one of these.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think there's been some changes in me as well. I think the whole recognizing when people are trying to sort of force their agenda as imposing it on everyone else, somehow I can't just follow suit. I mean, I'd have to say that I probably am, I think I'm more of a conservative guy and, perhaps even a little more so politically than you are.
Boy, the people in the forum don't think that.
Well, I talk weird. But the whole dynamic is, I think I do recognize, like, you know what, if you're ultimately going after the heart, you can't force that. And how you approach people makes all the difference in the world in terms of ever being able to establish a dialogue.
Didn't you think at this age, you and I, or you at least because we didn't know each other way back, but years ago, wouldn't you think you and I, people like us, would have been at the top of these institutions right now and be in control of them so they could really be used for what we think would be good stuff? I mean, that's where I thought I was headed.
Oh, yeah, I was pretty much, I mean, I was in the business world before I was a pastor, and I was climbing that ladder with, great success. And I didn't really like it, but it didn't seem to me that the whole corporate dynamic that's found also within the church was all that different. I pretty much found out how to climb that one too.
Right.
And
the thought was if we could get to the top, we could make
a difference.
We can make it better.
Yeah.
It would be better. And doggone it, if the right people would get in charge, it just seems like the wrong people were in charge. Sometimes, like the one writer said in the guy that wrote Religiously Transmitted Diseases, he says, it just so happens that using the older brother story from the prodigal story, he said, just so happens most of our religious institutions today are run by the older brother. Who's not merciful, who's upset when the sinner comes home. And that's not always true. I mean, it's a broad brush, but I do think there's an element of truth.
There's a predominance of truth there.
That's one of the things I have really struggled with. And even as late as this weekend, a little flare-up on the forum came to my desk over the weekend. It's not a big deal, but it's happened before. And one of the things I hate, to be honest, about facilitating the forum that we do here, or I facilitate a Lifestream Journeys list where people are ostensibly to come and feel free to share their journeys and to get some insight and encouragement from other brothers and sisters who are on this journey. And when they run well, they're fabulous. They're a fabulous way for people to connect. But when somebody comes on those, and I don't know if we had that kind of person this weekend or not. I mean, just there were some people that were concerned about a certain person, and we're trying to kind of communicate and work that out. But what I was hearing was people are now afraid to post, some are leaving the list. And that, I've been on these internet lists now for, gosh, maybe 7, 8, 9 years. And that seems to always be the case. You know, you get this wonderful group of people who are learning to dialogue. They don't agree on everything, but they know how to disagree without tearing each other's heads off and without belittling and mocking people. And then, you know, the 400 people we've got on that forum, 390 people can do it right. 390 people can just, you know, be sharing, growing. It only takes 5, 6, 7 people. It only takes one, really, to blow up something. Somebody that comes in and just says, you know what? I'm going to bleed, whether it's...
You know what? It's not just about a forum. I think it's true about life. And it's not just religious life. It's just about anywhere. Whenever there is sort of a platform for participation.
A regular gathering or... Exactly.
Some kind of thing where it's like there can be input from outside. Someone with an agenda, someone with their deal, it's like throw poison in the well. They can skew it. And I don't know how you stop that.
Yeah, that's what I'm struggling, because the one deal, somebody's got to play cop, or the people who are following Jesus don't seem to me, and this could be praying with a broad brush again, but it seems to me that people I meet on this journey no longer have the time, energy, or will to try and get in control and
to play cop
and be the cop over people trying to mess.
Well,
it's
just a job I don't want.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Jesus didn't play cop.
No, he didn't.
If you read through the Gospels and you look at what was going on there, you certainly had, you know, some folks like, I don't know, the Pharisees maybe, who were certainly trying to get control over what was going on and force their agenda and impose it on everyone else, like it shall be done this way. And it didn't seem to me that Jesus avoided. I mean, it seemed like he kind of like went out of his way to go heal on the Sabbath just for fun.
Go strip a few things. It's Saturday.
I think I would play with the Pharisees a little more.
I could find you a blind person.
So it seemed to me that Jesus was more than happy to be confrontive where a confrontation was needed. And yet he wasn't playing cop.
No, for sure.
And it seemed to me that... I mean, I don't know. I think it's because of the fullness of his person that he wasn't just wrangling about words. Because, I mean, I think Paul warns us that, you know, don't wrangle about words because it leads to the ruin of the listeners. And you're just going like, okay, I don't have any desire to wrangle about words with, you know, when someone has a religious question or religious argument and you just kind of like, you can smell that thing coming.
Yeah.
You're just going like... can I leave now? You know?
And isn't that true of whether it's these lists or a home group or in our fellowship? When I was pastoring way back when, we tried to have a real open kind of worship time so that anybody could come to a mic, anybody could share from their life story what they feel like God's putting in their heart. And again, 90% of the people would respect that and respect others. And then you've got this small sliver of people who've always got to get to a mic, who have an agenda they're trying to force down everyone else's throat. Or it just may be immaturity. Just, I want to be the center of attention.
Yeah, just the need.
Sometimes
to,
it's just that.
I want to be on the mic.
But it's not very effective. And you wrestle between saying, okay, you, stop it. You're off the mic for 6 weeks.
Benched!
Or the other side of that is that people start leaving. I was in a conference in California that we tried to do for house church, kind of outside the box folks here, 7 years ago or so. Maybe not quite that long ago. And 80 people there, maybe 80, 90 people. Again, 90% of them on a good page, living a journey, whatever. 3 people came with a ministry to sell or bondage to get out in front of everybody else. And every time we'd have a meeting, they would dominate. And they would dominate with a sense that one of them was a woman, and she would just dominate the whole thing. But she started out by her first sharing was how she's been held captive by pastors all her life, and she's been abused by power people in control, and she all this whiny thing. And it's like when she starts taking control, then everybody's kind of, well, man, if you say anything now, you're one of those guilty guys. And yet somebody needed to say something because there wasn't life coming. There was no life coming from this person. She may have been aware of that. She may not have been aware of that. But the fact is, most of the people just started, okay, I'm not going to the meetings anymore. We'll just stay in the camp.
No, you just want to kind of bail. But it's not just meetings. This could be happening in family dynamics. I guarantee you any family gathering of any size or extent, you're going to have some self-absorbed individuals that kind of co-opted the thing for their deal. And those, to me, are some of the more painful things to be a part of. They just – I don't think there's a pet peeve that I have that is worse than when you see someone who's in that kind of self-absorbed dynamic just ruin it
for a whole lot of other people.
Everybody else. And you're just going like
– And so few people are willing
– Right.
So few people are willing to say anything.
Oh, yeah, because in the fear of being offensive.
But partly that, and partly is – I'm going to have to do what they're doing to stop what – I'm going to have to take control. Part of my leaving was – I mean, part of the option of me being forced out of where I was, I could have fought. I could have probably won even fighting back. But do you want to become that kind of person? Do you want to have to take control of something to have place in it and to put down other people in the way they're putting you down? Maybe even if you're more right doing it. I didn't have the stomach to do it. Not then, not now. I don't.
See, but if in a moment you're confronting something that needs to be confronted, are you controlling it? I mean, I understand the fear because I think,
But you might be.
No, thank you. I mean, I have the same dilemma. You know, when I was in the whole pastoring role, it's like you're trying to foster an environment
a
of participation.
Environment. Absolutely.
And where there is the dynamic that it isn't some inverted pyramid that everyone ascends to the top and those are the important people. When you try to turn that thing on its head and you're just going like, look, it's not about whether the pyramid goes up or whether it goes down. It's like, I think Jesus squashed it. I think it's a pancake. I think it's a ollie-ollie income free and we're family. And when you try to put that forth, and then someone that kind of says, well, not for me, and I'm going to use this, and I see the platform, and you just go like, I don't think there's anything that's immune from someone doing that, and then how do you go about addressing it? Because if you don't, it gets spoiled for all.
And this has got to be, to me, why Paul wrote, speaking the truth in love will grow up in all aspects.
Yes.
Because I think what we want to have happen, I think, and I've felt the pressure having been a cop for a while in the religious context.
A religious conservative expert.
Watch it. Don't make me come over there. Because I Sorry. Will. In being one of those kind of cop-like types in the past, you feel all the eyes come on you to fix this.
Yeah.
And even in the form, because my form and then if I do say anything publicly or if I do fix some things privately, then even the people that I just think, man, are all of a sudden they start getting a little paranoid about, is this okay to say? Because I don't want Wayne, writing me and I don't want to do it.
Right.
So, there's all that fear, but I have found the only thing that works in smaller group settings, in larger group settings, on lists, if the majority of the people would just be honest, these things would sort out. But we've learned in the family of the body of Christ, I think we've learned not speak the truth in love, but nice is better than honest.
Yeah. And the dysfunction that breeds.
Yeah,
is
I have to be nice. And who am I
terrible.
To say? And what if I don't know? But if enough people, and I love this about some of the meetings I saw in Australia years ago, where anybody would, if they had an open time of prayer or sharing or whatever, and people would start sharing stuff, one of the things they would do is just stop and say, how's that sound, Olives? That sound right? That sound like God? And they allowed the space of free conversation where somebody didn't have to stand up and say, that's just wrong. You got to stop and sit down. It turns nasty.
You are out of order.
But there was a lot of times when people would just say, that's not on my heart. That's not on my heart. And it would just quiet on and it would move on. It wasn't a big deal. The person wasn't left with this ultra embarrassing thing. But it was clear to them that the group's not there and the group's not going there. And so you either are coming along with the group or you may, if you've got particularly agenda, and I don't mean just, you got some passions in your life. I mean, you want to make something of this group or you want to be something in this group. That's what I mean. And without somebody to stop it, that's what most people want. I want a police. I want somebody in charge. And that's kind of what we end up with these institutions that we do.
But you know what? I do think that. It's kind of like if you put it in a family setting, if the parents don't ever provide instruction, correction, and discipline for the children as they're growing up, you're going to end up with some awfully unfun people to be around. I mean, you just are. I mean, I look at, we have so many different friends with so many different kids at so many different ages, but there's always the notorious ones that you're just going like, oh man, I do not want to hang out with those folks because their kids are out of control.
They're going to break all my kids' toys.
And... Yeah, I mean, you're just going like, and our kids are looking like, no, we're not going over there. And you're just going like, it's a tragedy.
Then you always get them with this. Look, if you're not going over there, we're going to have them over here.
Nothing's new under the sun,
right? That's how we did it, yeah.
The challenge is like, you know what? If you leave things unsaid and you never care enough to actually address it, that thing becomes like an elephant under the carpet. It just stays there to be a mess.
But in the context of the body, who are those parents?
See, in the context of the body, I think even as brothers and sisters, those of you who are like more mature, I think Paul writes that exhortation. It's kind of like, you know what? Even speaking to fathers, it's like there's a way that we can bring correction, rebuke the reproofs of life out of like, you know, Proverbs, that if we fail to do that with each other, it's hard. I don't want to do it. But it doesn't matter. It's not like, okay, who has the most gray hair? It's not who's the oldest.
Right.
In a setting, it's like, you know what? If you have some sense of maturity.
And it's not who's in charge. So, like, this year you do it. Next year you do it. I mean, that's the way we.
Oh, when you assign it, it's almost worse because that becomes a power trip.
Absolutely. And then instead of being at the whim of a few people, we're at the whim of a power freak who likes
it. Yeah. I think it's more, I mean, it's not this. You know, mamby-pamby little, oh, just however the Spirit leads you.
Why do you do that with people?
I'm sorry.
You got to stop it, man. You got to stop it.
The dynamic is, you know what? There's relational reality. Do I have place in this person's life wherein I can speak this truth? And it is with a motive of love, and it's going to be heard. I think there's situations where something's got to be said anyways, even if it does get misinterpreted.
Yeah, and I think it helps if all the people who see it. Basically, I think when somebody comes on a list like I am, or if I'm in a group, I think we've said this before, when somebody says something that's just horribly self-motivated, it's not unobvious to the other 90% of the people in the room. I mean, most people are going to go, oh, boy, that just bleeds with all kinds of agenda, and I wish we could stop this now. If those people would find ways to speak up, say, hold it a minute, and not just, hey, that's wrong, sit down, shut up, but say something like, you know, hold it, I'm not sure I'm in sync with this. How do some of the rest of you feel? I think that's a wonderful,
great
way to go, because it opens a door to talk about it, and for the group as a whole, if people will be honest. But I've had oftentimes people come to me behind the scenes saying, you know, Wayne, you've got to deal, you've got to fix this, you've got to...
And I see, I wonder if there isn't, when those people actually feel it that strong, if there isn't some of the shirking of the responsibility that perhaps the Holy Spirit's nudging on them.
Yep.
Because
it is uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. And when someone brings it to me, like, here's a problem that I think you need to solve, it's more like, you know what? Chances are the person that's bringing that to me needs to be part of this as well. And so I've kind of given myself to involving them to come along, be part of the solution as a life lesson of how you go about doing this. Because I think I'm not afraid to confront people.
Yeah,
I'm not. I mean, you know, it's like it's part of my personality.
I just don't like being the only one to do it all the time.
Well, I don't think we're supposed to.
Absolutely.
Because how will people learn unless, one, it's modeled, and two, unless it's modeled as kind of a loving group dynamic. If it's one person's job, they're the religious cop.
Yep.
And I don't think anyone learns that way. That's you're the religious expert, so you do it. And then there's no development of life and discernment in all.
And the focus actually goes to the cop, because now we're not thinking, what is God doing here? But is Brad going to like this or not? That's where the focus is.
Oh, yeah, that's why it's ruined.
Yeah, absolutely ruined. And why, if we don't get this, if we don't learn what it means, I think the New Testament really speaks in language like in honor, preferring one another. Unless we get to the place where we really learn that this engagement of each other as the family is not the opportunity for me to play one-upsmanship games. It's not the opportunity for me to get my agenda served. It's not the opportunity for me to bleed my pain all over others. But the reality is the newest, the most immature people in this kingdom, who might be incredibly sincere pursuers of Christ, haven't been on this journey long enough not to know what their selfishness is. I mean, not to realize when it's there. And so if we don't, I think that's the, in relationships, in meetings, if there aren't elders with a small e, and I don't mean the title, I just mean older brothers and sisters in the faith who are willing to come alongside young ones and help them get it, not just blast them for getting it wrong. Boy, that was awful selfish last night. What do you think of that? But just come alongside and just say, you know, it seems like you're really struggling here. It's just something I could do to help you and really help people grow up. That's what we're doing with Amy. Amy's a little granddaughter we got around here. And, we defer to her in so many areas because she's young and helpless and all that good stuff. But we're not going to let her run everything because we're afraid to talk to her.
Well, I mean, I watch it in my own kids. I got, you know, I got Jared, who's 12. I got Jonathan, who's 9, about to be 10. And I got Taylor, who's 5, and you're just going like, there's a whole different maturity levels all across the spectrum. And in that dynamic, it's like Taylor does stuff that bugs the older boys. And they just kind of want to, you know, and they want to exercise their authority inappropriately. Okay? And it is a lesson. It is a repeated lesson of how do I approach someone who's younger and immature? And who is doing something that, you're correct, is wrong. But how do I do it in a way that doesn't squash them, doesn't squelch them, doesn't destroy them, where they don't feel rejected, but they feel loved and instructed? And I think when you think of this stuff in the context of families growing up, it totally makes sense.
Absolutely.
I think when you try to look at this in the structure of some hierarchy or organization, it all becomes power plays, and I kind of wonder, well, maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe this is all meant to be in the context of relational, family-understood kind of dynamics, where it's not like, hey, Brother Wayne, and hi, Brother Brad. It's not where those become little goofy titles,
right?
But where those really are the nature of the relationships.
And in that vein, I think we have the opportunity to really help each other grow, to let weak ones be weak ones, but don't let them dominate the life of anything.
Yeah.
And take the life out of it. And I want to encourage brothers and sisters a little bit older, and just once, because something gets rugged, don't go run for the doors and, you know, go, you know, I'm just going to grow up in peace now. Be part of helping people grow through this stuff.
Well, isolationism doesn't work.
It doesn't.
Because I don't think Jesus has called us on a journey that I'm just on my own private walk with him through the forest. I think we're called to be part of a ever increasing growing family. And there are spheres of, I think, authority and responsibility that ebb and flow depending on the relationships that I'm in. I think there's some people that I'm in relationship with that I'd have to say, you know what? I have some fathering kinds of responsibilities to them. To care for them, to love them, to help lead them along. And then there's gloriously some other environments that I'm in that you're just going like, you know what? Guess what? I don't have those because I'm learning a ton from all of those people.
Right.
And so it's not like, well, what hat am I wearing? It's like, you know what? It's not a title. It's not a rank or a role. It's more like the nature of the relationships. How do I walk that out? And I don't think they're that confused to me. I tend to know in a setting that, I don't seem to know as much as what's going on here. And I take the role of a learner. You know, in a situation.
And sometimes that can change within the same group. Sometimes
a given half hour.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think if we'll learn to relate to each other that way, then maybe these things aren't so painful. But they're still kind of scary.
They are kind of scary. But you look at Jesus and, you know, the things he called out. When stuff happened, he wasn't mean about it, but you know, James and John sneak up on him and say, you know, we'd like to be top few guys in your kingdom. And Jesus kind of walks him through a bit of a, you know, do you want to die the way I'm going to die? Though he didn't quite say it that way. And finally gets to the other 10 upset because they didn't ask first. You know, if you call it, you get. It's like riding shotgun, you know.
Shotgun,
I want left or right in the kingdom. And so they're all upset. And he just said, you know, guys, let's talk about this a minute. Because leadership in this kingdom is not about lording over, it's about serving. It's about giving your life away. Even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve. And when James and John want to call down fire from heaven and burn out the Samaritans, because they weren't as hospitable to them as they would have hoped they would have been, and Jesus looks at them and says, hey, you don't know what spirit you're of. It's just the honesty. He didn't make a rule. He didn't pull rank. He just spoke the truth. You know, we're doing leadership that way. And you don't know what spirit is calling down fire, burning people. It's not the spirit of this kingdom.
Yeah, oops.
So we have in Jesus, I think, the examples of the kinds of things that can be said without making rules, without appointing somebody to make, you know, be the cop for us, of people who are a little bit older in this journey, being able to help younger ones see what spirit they're of, see that they're headed for the wrong thing, give them the opportunity to listen to it and hear it and see if that open, that instead of the nice is better than honest, speaking the truth in love. That's how we were called to grow up. If we don't learn that, and I don't know about forumless and, you know, internet. We got 400 people that really don't know each other, have never been face to face with each other. I just think the dynamics of that are always scary. Anybody can come in there and ruin that, and when it does, we'll just shut it down and try again some other time, some other way. But I particularly in our face-to-face engagements, particularly in meetings that we're in, and I'm often have that role when I'm in a home with people who don't know each other, and they've kind of all come together because of me, and I happen to be in the area. I don't mind facilitating that, but I really will give people a widest possible berth. Come bleed here if you need to bleed. Come hurt. Get some stuff out. But just don't take over. Don't make you the center of attention. I don't want to be the center of that attention either. I want by the end of the weekend people to have said, man, I just want to love this Jesus more than I loved him starting out. I mean, that's my greatest desire. But I don't mind taking a facilitating role when I need to. I just want other brothers and sisters to join me there too. I want a lot of us to do it.
Well, I think if you, in all the settings that you're in, if you always assume that role, the development, the growing up that's meant to happen and what I think is your desire will be thwarted.
Yep.
And I think it's hard. I mean, I find myself in a lot of different settings. They're so used to me being the teacher, me being the guy, and they're kind of like, you sit in those settings and you're just going like, okay, why is everyone inert right now? Why are they shifting into passive, you know, dynamics? And you're just going like, okay, I hate this. And they're going like, you know, do something. They're not saying it, but they're all looking it, and you're just going like, okay, I'm out of here. And people get frustrated and upset, but just going like, you know what? This is stunting it. I know when I warp a room, and I'm going like, I'm not here to warp it, and I don't want to.
That's more of a danger where you're at all the time. If I'm at one place for a weekend of my whole life, that's not going to happen. But when at home, when I'm around believers and get together a lot, and I get that same kind of look,
yeah,
I don't even go there. But it's around home. People always say to me, why don't you fix it? Man, that was really getting ugly. And I said, you know what? You could have fixed it. You could have spoken up. Any one of us could speak up. And if I'm always the one doing it, it is going to warp something. And I think there's a real difference between what you do once or twice in your life and what you do every week, for instance.
But again, it's like when you look in the dynamics, it's like, you know, with my kids at the age of development that they're at, I have to take a little more active role in decision making, guiding.
Absolutely.
Them.
Yep.
But if I continue to do that, guess what? I'm going to have some stunted, immature kids
angry,
that don't know how to make decisions.
Absolutely.
That the minute they're given, quote, a freedom that I've been restraining, they're going to go nuts. And so it's like I'm seeing this more and more as I look through the lens of how to relate in the body of Christ, and I relate it to the family dynamics that are natural and make sense in my home, my nuclear family. So much of that, I think, translates into how authority and place and function are meant to be expressed. They're in that same heart attitude. And when it's done with that, it seems to function well. When someone's pulling rank, it seems like you can see that too. And that never really accomplishes much. You're like, okay, he's on a power trip.
Even for fathers, if they got the because I'm the dad, that's why t-shirt on.
And that leads to no instruction and no changed heart.
No, it doesn't. It's just I'm pull rank, and at the end of the day, you're going to be bitter and hostile, and you're going to not wait to get out of my house. And, yeah, I think that, I mean, in a functional family, a healthy family, you're not going to have the authority you're talking about. It's not because I'm the dad, that's why. It's because I can help you, and I want to help you. And if I am helping you, you'll respond to that in a way that's helpful, and it's a way that's going to help everything.
And if we allow unhealthy individuals or unhealthy dynamics to remain unaddressed, you know what it does? It kills the life where no one wants to gather. No one wants
scatter.
To be a part of that.
Absolutely.
And that happens in families as well as it happens in meetings.
Yep.
And it's like, if we don't have the courage to address it, it'll be stolen. It'll be destroyed.
And maybe that's that narrow way that somehow we've got to walk. On the one hand, you don't want the authoritarian traffic cop. We'll make this place safe because one guy's in charge. And on the other hand, we don't want to all scatter to our own isolation because it's just too hard to be with others and it's just, you know, we can't work it out. But to really walk in the reality of relationship that spurs people on to love and growth. At the same time, it doesn't take over because I've noticed as long as I've been this journey, when I first, the first guy I met on this journey when I wasn't on it yet of, you know, learning to live relationally instead of thinking the institution was the end-all, be-all way of doing the kingdom, he bothered me because we tried to offer him eldership. We tried to offer him a staff position. We tried to offer him everything. And he just...
Get him re-engaged.
He
huh?
just was... Yeah, because he was like damaged goods and hurting, and we had to get him back in the flock, you know? Everything I offered him never even tempted him. I mean, it wasn't like, ooh, gosh, that'd be great. He'd just look at me and say, nah, I'm not really interested. And the more I've walked on this journey in the last 20 years, the more I see people who are on the journey of Christ-likeness have no interest in being in power and taking over and having control. And people who got to be in power have got to have, who see institutional authority as a valuable piece of something. Man, I don't always in those, unless they're very young in it, I don't see hearts there wanting to be Christ-like. It's something to me about Christ-likeness really is a dive to servanthood. Yeah, it's not the selfish ambition, the want to be the man in the center, want to be on the stage, want to be in control. It seems to me that the more Jesus takes shape, at least this is true in my life, the more he's taking shape in me. And it's not that you just don't want control or power. You just see it as worthless. I think that's what you said earlier. It doesn't change the heart anyway. I can be in charge of all kinds of things, and the fruitfulness of it would only be temporal and external.
It's a flippin' waste of time.
That's the point.
It just doesn't work. And it's like if that's your passion and you need to climb some kind of mountain and you need to be in charge, you know what? There's a ton of institutions where, you know, frankly, you'll get pat on the back and you get pushed to the front. I just don't see those as being the arenas that are reproducing Christ-likeness.
Absolutely.
You know, they'll have their success measures. You might have fame and fortune. You may have all your good little trappings and say, ooh, check out our fruit. And I'm going like, I did. I have. And I don't think that's the fruit that God is trying to grow.
Yeah, because in that environment, I wasn't changing, nor were the people I was trying to help weren't changing.
No, you're kind of hiding and pretending and performing.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think that the challenge is, you know what? That's the whole family. We're still related to those people.
We are?
I think we are.
That might be a whole nother show.
I know it is. I know it is. But the biggest challenge that I'm struggling with is that I don't feel the permission to just go off on my own little hike with Jesus and enjoy it. When I recognize so many different times, I'm still related to the larger family, and I don't know how to disempower the people that have the selfish ambition that have seemed to ensconce themselves in their places of power. And you're just going like, I don't think God's asked me to fight that, but you're just going like, Lord, how does this whole thing work? You know, it's like, could you come back?
Now, I tell you a little about how that works, I think, because I hang out near some of those people who, I mean, they're in the power structure. A part of them loves it. Also, a part of them wrestles with the fallacy of it.
Oh, yeah, and they know it.
At times, they know it, and they're good at hiding it. But, you know, when you're just loving them and hang around them, and then they start making excuses about stuff, and you just an honest comment, playfully here and there, it drives them nuts. It's actually a little fun. It does, because you kind of say, you know, are you tired yet? You know, are you about? Because one guy he just retired from quote unquote pastoral ministry. He's been yelling at me for 12 years. Would you stop this little game you're on and get a real church and be a pastor and do what God's called you to do? And I just look at him and go, I have no idea what you're talking about, but thanks anyway. He's a dear, dear friend of mine. I love this man. I've even preached at his assembly.
His club.
He just retired recently. And he's in his 60s. I mean, he's retirement age. And he's sitting, now I get email from him going, can't believe, man, my eyes are just open. It's just, I have so much creativity. I'm not tired all the time. Okay, man, I've been telling you this for 12 years. He finally got it. Just, man, don't wait till you retire because that's exhausting. But I think we just hang around. Same thing we talked about earlier. Hang around people. Love them. Be honest with them. Because that thing is a weight all its own. That thing will wear any genuine seeker out in time. It will.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't provide what it promises to provide.
No, it doesn't. And I think if there's something to be said, it's the fact that, you know what, each one of us has to kind of ask the Lord in this given situation of whatever I'm at, Lord, what's my portion? What am I meant to do? Because if it's just, gee, I don't like that and I'm out of here, then the whole thing never redemptively, I think, gets worked to where the Lord is wanting to engage us. We're meant to be salt and light.
Partly. And the other thing I think that Paul kept saying, and I love this, is that God wants to bring all things together under Christ, who is the head.
Yep.
God's about bringing things together. He's not about
bailing
and increased isolation. I'll just live where I'm most comfortable. It really is, how is God knitting me into this family? And what has he asked me to do? And even if it's awkward and even if it's hard, if we do it, the body of Christ will grow up and be healthy.
Yes.
And if we don't do it, it'll continue to be dysfunctional and impotent, and doggone it, the world has seen enough of that.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.